The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is 1947, Hoboken, New Jersey. The Union Club, the corner of Broadway and Rector Street. A meeting of the U.S. Steel Board with the stockholders, represented by very few people scattered across the room. This is a gritty part of Hoboken, New Jersey. I learn in a new book, Fearless, Wilma Soss and America's Forgotten Investor Movement. I welcome Professor Janice Trafflett and her colleague, Robert Wright, co-author. Introduce me into this meeting and what we're going to learn about a young person at the time. She's 47 years old, Wilma Soss, an inspiration to everyone who wants to confront power in the same room. Professor, a very good day to you. Thank you. Wilma Soss, at this point, has been to the meeting the year before and did not like how the meeting was conducted by Irving Olds, the chairman of U.S. Steel. What didn't she like and what does she do that day? Good evening to you.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. And I'm delighted to talk about Wilma Soss. Wilma Soss was an incredibly successful PR pioneer. And she, in 1946, the year before you opened the scene with, had gone to her first shareholder meeting, even though at the time, she when she went to this meeting, she wasn't sure what she wanted to accomplish from it, but she wanted to go to the meeting and find out more about the company. And in 1946, when she went to this first shareholder meeting, she felt that small investors got the brush off, which irritated her. And she was a product of Columbia School of Journalism, and she wanted to get the story and find out the facts about the company. And she was also upset that U.S. Steel had no woman on the board. At the time, no Fortune 500 company had any woman on any of their boards. And she went back the next year and decided to speak up at the meeting. And when she spoke up, she said that she had no that divine inspiration hit her. She had no prior agenda. But when she stood up at that meeting, she declared that she was forming a Federation of Women Shareholders in American Business to fight for the rights of women investors. Eventually, the Federation goes on for many decades to press for the rights, not just of women investors, but all small investors.
What we have here is the beginning of what we now understand as activism by by shareholders. The examples are, over the last 70 years, stunning, the big examples, and they're ongoing. Sometimes it's done by major shareholders, sometimes by a grouping of shareholders. But Wilma invents it on her feet that day to Irving Olds from Pennsylvania, a man who is a graduate of Yale College and Harvard Law School, and the idea of challenging U.S. Steel and what it pays its executives and how much it pays its shareholders is not much considered anywhere, male or female at the time. But Wilma certainly gets the attention of the board. This is the beginning of Wilma's crusade, but what is the background for it? Let's go to the end of the war, 1945. Everybody knows about Rosie the Riveter because they advertised it. That was the way to sell war bonds. What I didn't know about was a group of young people called the Page Girls. Who were they, Professor?
So interestingly, I've done a lot of research at the New York Stock Exchange Archive. And I stumbled upon a folder that was marked labor unions. And in it told the story of this remarkable band of young women who during World War II took on the role of what used to be page boys, who used to run from post to post on the New York Stock Exchange floor, be helping out the brokers in with their messages. And it used to be the New York Stock Exchange was an all-male bastion. And the page girls broke that gender barrier when the page boys went off to fight World War II. Sadly, when the war ended, all the page girls were relocated off the exchange floor. So they went back to their original roles as clerks and other behind the scenes roles at the New York Stock Exchange. And Wilma Soss was fighting for all the page girls and the Rosie the Riveters of the world who had lost their jobs in late 1940s as we returned to quote-unquote normalcy.
And they didn't like it. The page girls didn't like it. Rosie the Riveter didn't like it. Wilma sees this. She's a successful public relations executive at the time. I think I wrote down that she's paid $30,000 a year by one of her clients to keep the clients.
She's making a remarkable amount of money in the Great Depression of all times.
She's doing very well, but she decides to write for Forbes magazine an article that inspires a lot of people reading it. What did she say in the piece? This is 1945. Yeah.
The headline of the piece was "Women Are Here to Stay." And what she predicted was that women would continue to be working outside the home, and their entry into, or some people are women obviously were already in the paid workforce before World War II, but the expansion of the paid women in the ranks of the labor force, she predicted was going to only continue, even if there might be a temporary, reversal. And she also, in that particular article, that she was commissioned by BC Forbes to do a census of who owns stock in American corporations. And again, this is back to her journalism career. And so she went to listed companies and asked them to share what was on their books. Who do you have as shareholders in your company? Remarkably, the New York Stock Exchange did not keep track of the total share ownership base, and neither did any other entity in the United States. And so when she's doing this research, she stumbles upon something that surprises her and winds up surprising most of the country once they find out of what her discovery was, which was that about half the shareholders in the corporations that she polled were women. And some corporations like AT&T actually had more individual women shareholders than male shareholders. And so her contention was that if women are owning so many shares in American corporations, they need to flex their muscles more.
There are activists or challengers or gadflies before, but the two we need to know about, the Gilbert brothers, who were they, Professor?
Yeah, there were actually very few shareholder activists in the country, period, in most of the first half of the 20th century. Lewis and John Gilbert were probably the most well-recognized corporate gadflies at the time. And they came from a family of affluence, they had very similar experience to Wilma Soss decades later. The Lewis and John Gilbert had gone to a 1930s meeting of Con Ed and had been treated rudely by the board and had their questions rebuffed. And that got Lewis and John Gilbert enraged and wanting to stand up for other small investors like themselves. And so they spend really the rest of their lives trying to fight for the rights of small investors. So they were already on the scene when Wilma Soss winds up in that fateful U.S. Steel meeting forming the Federation of Women Share Owners. And they are actually quite helpful to Wilma Soss and giving her tips on how to be effective.
Because Wilma attends the meetings. The Gilberts generally do not. I note that Gilbert's, however, requiring another direction, Professor, but I discovered Charles Schwab, the executive in charge of Bethlehem Steel.
Yeah.
He had a gambling habit. Did they know about it at the time? He died broke.
It was remarkable. He had this huge mansion, New York City, the Riverside Mansion. And everyone thought that Charles Schwab, the head of Bethlehem Steel, was rolling in money because he had, quite a hefty salary. And yet he had a gambling habit that put him in major financial duress. And so when the Gilbert brothers were pressing him that he shouldn't, during the Great Depression, have been taking such a huge salary, I'm not sure how aware they were, but that Schwab would have said, I really do need the money to support my gambling habit.
I mention that detail because the corporations of the first half of the 20th century have no resemblance whatsoever to the corporations of the first half of the 21st century. And Wilma and the Gilbert brothers are part of this transformation. When we come back, we're going to turn now to Broadway. When we come back, there's a very famous play that becomes a famous movie. It's called The Solid Gold Cadillac. We're going to tell the story of Wilma and the Solid Gold Cadillac. The professor is Janice Trafflett. Her colleague, co-author, Robert Wright. The book is Fearless, William Soss, Wilma Soss, and America's Forgotten Investor Movement. I'm John Batchelor.